WNYC Studios is brought to you by ZBiotics. Seize the day after a night of drinks with ZBiotics pre-alcohol probiotic drink. ZBiotics was invented by PhD scientists to break down the byproduct of alcohol, which is most responsible for making you feel crummy the next day. Drink ZBiotics before your first drink, drink responsibly, and you'll wake up refreshed and ready to take on the day. Try it for yourself at ZBiotics.com/WNYC and get 15% off your first order when you use WNYC at checkout. That's ZBiotics.com/WNYC and use the code WNYC at checkout for 15% off. This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate. Then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is On the Media. I'm Brooke Gladstone. Interpreting polls is tough, even for the most media literate. They can be contradictory and, you know, wrong. Their ubiquity may be one of the reasons so many of us, when faced with the news, choose to turn away. But certainly not the only reason, and certainly not these days. Benjamin Toff is an assistant professor at the Hubbard School of Journalism and Mass Communication at the University of Minnesota and co-author of the book Avoiding the News, Reluctant Audiences for Journalism. Welcome to the show, Benjamin.
Thank you so much. Great to be here.
You and your co-authors interviewed about 100 people across three countries and then supplemented those interviews with surveys. They're people who consume news less than once a month, right?
Right. In some countries, it's a relatively small group, like 1 or 2% in, say, Denmark or Finland. But in the United States and the UK, it was more like 7 or 8%, which is millions of people. And so the project began with wanting to understand, who are these people? What are their lives like? What do they think about the news and journalism that they're encountering? There is a mix of people who are in this category, and some were very well-educated, very politically engaged to some degree. They had made a very deliberate choice. For example, there was an engineer I spoke with in Iowa who had done a cost-benefit analysis of his own time and felt like paying attention to news just wasn't worth the time investment that he was putting into it. But for many others, the pattern is pretty consistent that the people who are most likely in this category, who are paying little to no attention to news, tend to be among the most marginalized people in society. They tend to be less educated, lower socioeconomic status. They tend to be already on the margins of society when it comes to engaging, participating in political life.
You mean principally voting?
Principally voting, but in a sort of all ways politically. And a lot of these one-on-one conversations, people would talk about how they found it just so hard to make sense of important political issues going on in their own communities because they felt so disconnected.
So for these people who feel disconnected from the news, you found that that behavior was bound up in other forms of disengagement.
Yeah.
A lot of these people, for instance, just don't have the time. They may be working two jobs and taking care of family members. They, you found, may regard news as an irrelevant luxury.
Right. Part of it was about a sort of existing store of knowledge to make sense of the information that they were encountering. People feel like they have to look up the details of what terms mean.
You referred to a kind of arcane news language where you had to come to a story with some prior knowledge of it.
Exactly. And a lot of the people who were paying so little attention to the news, they didn't know how to place themselves politically on the left or right. They often didn't really identify with any political party. And so the stakes of a lot of political stories just didn't really register for them. And so it was also about like being invested in stories in, about politics, which for many people, that's what they equated news with.
Do you have any guesses why younger people of lower socioeconomic status are more likely to avoid the news than older people?
One piece of it is people will say, It's not that they don't see any potential value in news. Some will say, you know, I expect when I get older, maybe when I have a mortgage, maybe when I have these other commitments or I'm more rooted in a community, maybe then I'll pay more attention to it. And I think that for this population in general, there was a kind of common frustration of like, well, what difference does it make ultimately? If I know more about what's happening, what can I actually do about anything? If you don't feel like there's much you can actually do to solve the myriad problems that the news is presenting, it doesn't feel like it's a good investment of your time.
I think a lot of us think of it as a solo activity. You know, maybe you read the paper, you do that by yourself, or you're listening to the radio. But you drew a very clear conclusion that news consumption is principally social.
People who really enjoy news, who are immersed in these news communities, it's a very social activity. It's a sort of point of connection between people. We talk about how to make sense of what you're hearing and sort of process the information. And I think it's a really important piece of how we don't allow it to just make us feel as depressed as it might, because we sort of rely on each other to help us feel like, A, there's maybe something we can do about what we're hearing, but also, you know, a source of strength from those around us as they're having kind of a similar experience.
Some people told you that they never developed a routine of consuming news, and they didn't know people who did.
For myself, and I think for my co-authors as well, I think it made us that much more aware of, if we're really honest with ourselves, why do we consume the amount of news that we do? You know, we'd like to tell ourselves it's because we feel more empowered as citizens. It's not that that stuff isn't true. It's just that there's a bigger part of the explanation here that I think does trace back to the communities we're a part of, the social expectations around consuming news, and the benefits we derive from talking about news with the people in our lives. For people who generally are not paying attention to news, they often don't have that in their lives. And so it not only makes it harder to feel like there's much enjoyable part of the experiences of paying attention to news, but also kind of reinforcing the notion that it's a useful habit to develop.
Folk theories are a way that people sort of weave together a notion of how the world works. And there are folk theories about media and media platforms that you encountered. One of them was the idea that the news will find me.
Yeah. People have the sense that when they go online, they don't have to seek out the news on their own or even develop their own habits around following news, that it'll just sort of find you all by itself. And to some degree, I think those of us who are immersed in very strong communities of other news consumers, we do see a lot of posts by other people we know, other journalists we know. But the algorithms themselves, the platforms themselves, not everybody's experience is going to be the same. And so there's a belief that this is the case that may not be necessarily matched with the reality of one's experience when they do go on these platforms. One of the other folk theories that we heard in the course of these interviews was what we call the information is out there folk theory, which is the sense that if you wanted to know what was going on, you would just go out and Google it and then you'd find it all. But actually, that information only exists because there was a journalist who spent time and resources gathering that news. And that piece of the puzzle has often gone unstated or sort of unacknowledged among a lot of the news voters.
So those are two of the folk theories. The news will find me, or I can easily find the news because of the technology. But there's a third theory that seems to belie the other two, which is, even if I encounter news, I won't know how to make sense of it.
Yeah, we call that the I don't know what to believe folk theory. And, you know, not all news avoiders felt it. There were some who felt sort of fairly confident in their own ability to make sense of what information they might encounter. And part of it was because they also didn't feel like most news was all that relevant to them. So they didn't have a whole lot of desire to make sense of a lot of that information that was out there. But there were others who were pretty frustrated and felt like they just didn't have the sort of tools at their disposal to make sense of the differences between different news organizations or why they should trust one versus the other. And this kind of very strong protective sense that like they needed to be distrusting of everything that was out there because they didn't want to be manipulated.
So the safer course of action wasn't to trust anything that you saw and just avoid it all.
Exactly. And there is definitely a strong correlation between trust and the likelihood that somebody was avoiding the news. On the other hand, it's not purely about distrust. There's a fair amount of people who would say, you know, it's not news, it's me. And they would talk about being very anxious people, or would feel like, oh, maybe there's useful information out there, but it's just too difficult to figure out which of those sources is reliable. And so they would take the position that it was sort of easier or smarter to just be distrusting of everything.
A few years back, I spoke with Eitan Hirsch, the author of Politics is for Power, How to Move Beyond Political Hobbyism, Take Action, and Make Real Change. He took a survey of about 1,000 people, and he found that of the people who say they spend 2 or more hours each day on politics and civic engagement, the vast majority of them are just reading the news and talking about politics.
They read the newspaper, they listen to NPR, and then they could listen to a bunch of podcasts or watch MSNBC or Fox News for hours. And even if the stuff they're learning about is, you know, gossip and minutia, they'll say, ah, it's my civic duty to be informed. But if you ask them, like, okay, well, who should I vote for in a local election? They would say, I have no idea. I don't know anything about the local elections. I don't know anything about this state. I really could just tell you a lot about Sharpiegate, the Mueller investigation, but I can't tell you a thing that would actually inform your vote.
All this news consumption didn't translate into actual political work or going out and helping people in the community or giving money to charity. So maybe the news avoiders have a point.
I do think they have a point. And I do think that there are levels of news consumption that I think can border on kind of spectatorship, particularly around politics, where, you know, part of the interest in it is people are really invested in their side winning. And there's a segment of news avoiders in the United States that was unique around people who are expressing a kind of discontent about mainstream media and see it as sort of liberal bias is the reason why they're avoiding the news.
When you ask news avoiders, is it a civic duty to consume the news? You said there was some ambivalence. Some of them, though, felt strongly that it doesn't make a better citizen to hear and parrot sound bites.
Yeah, one of the other news avoiders we did a follow-up interview with, in the intervening months in between, he changed his habits and he started to subscribe to satellite radio in his car. He spent a lot of his work day driving around the state. And one of the things he noticed right away was he thought that one of his colleagues who talked about news a lot, and he found it sort of a source of annoyance, the degree to which he talked about the news. What he said was he felt like he was not actually as smart as he seemed. He was just repeating things he had heard on CNN. Those of us who pay a lot of attention to news, it does give us ways of making sense of the world around us that I think can be a value, but also it can be a kind of crutch, especially when it comes to politics.
So the news environment we're currently swimming in is especially heavy and difficult. And there's two major wars dominating the headlines. Sometimes I don't think it's helpful to be always embroiled in the suffering of others. I think it can be paralyzing. I guess the question is, how do you know when the amount you're consuming is not healthy?
I think it's partly about sort of giving yourself permission that it's perfectly natural to feel that way, and it can be healthier to cut back and to find strategies that are more about ensuring that the time and attention you're spending with news are valuable and be more about the quality of that experience rather than it being about the quantity. I think that there are really important functions that news plays in a way that few other institutions in society can substitute for. And I'm thinking of one of the news lovers that I interviewed who he had a pretty challenging life. He was a recovering alcoholic who was unemployed. He was homebound because his driver's license had been revoked. And for him, news was, rather than this kind of horribly depressing thing that I think many of us feel like it often is, he recognized that. But for him, he said it was a window into the outside world. And he so appreciated having access to all of these things happening elsewhere in a way that he really drew strength from. And I think for some people have that reaction, and I think that's a very positive thing. And I think news isn't always just a negative experience. If it was, you know, no one would be paying attention to it.
Benjamin Toff is the co-author of the new book, Avoiding the News, Reluctant Audiences for Journalism. Thanks.
You're welcome.
Coming up, when a comic stretches an autobiographical truth to make a bad thing seem worse, Is that still comedy? This is On the Media.
WNYC Studios is brought to you by ZBiotics. Seize the day after a night of drinks with ZBiotics pre-alcohol probiotic drink. ZBiotics was invented by PhD scientists to break down the byproduct of alcohol, which is most responsible for making you feel crummy the next day. Drink ZBiotics before your first drink, drink responsibly, and you'll wake up refreshed and ready to take on the day. Try it for yourself at ZBiotics.com/WNYC and get 15% off your first order when you use WNYC at checkout. That's ZBiotics.com/WNYC and use the code WNYC at checkout for 15% off.